The following program is work safe and family safe. Feel free to listen to it wherever and with whomever you like. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm Pokey.
Oh, and I'm Resno.
And we're here to talk about running Ethernet cable at Resno's house. Probably most of you are not going to run Ethernet cable at Resno's house, but since running cable in a home is so much different than running cable in an industrial setting or in an office-type setting, it's almost like a custom job every time you run cable in a home, especially when you're doing what's considered old work. And old work is anytime you're putting new cables or new work of any kind, really, into an existing structure. Whereas if you're building a house or a building from ground up, that's considered new work. A lot of contractors, a lot of different fields, will get paid a lot more for old work. So it's pretty beneficial to know how to run cable in your own home, because it is pretty easy. It's low voltage stuff. You don't need a license to do it. Of course, check your jurisdiction. But it could save you a lot of money, and you could get a pretty good network going. So now, this started a couple of weeks ago, Resno, when you asked me what the difference was between Cat 5 and Cat 6 cable and how difficult it was to run. It was just a little too much to explain in IRC chat, so I thought we would do this together.
Sure.
It was very gracious of you to come and help me out with this episode.
Sure, no problem.
So thank you for that. I tried recording this episode twice on my own and just couldn't do it. I ramble way too much doing this.
It gets hard to do, to sort of do a monologue type of thing.
Yeah, especially because I never can tell when I'm getting too deep into it or when I'm not going deep enough. So I'm really appreciating
the
help. So first of all, to get started, to answer the question, what's the difference between Category 5 and Category 6 cable? The biggest difference right off the bat is just speed. The next difference is cost. And the last difference really is how difficult it is to work with. Category 5 cable actually isn't even a spec that's used anymore. It's now Category 5E. But what Cat 5 basically means, it's an entire spec and the cable is just part of it, is Category 5 cable can run up to 100 megabits per second. So it's 10 base T and 100 base T or 100 base TX. I'm not sure what the difference between T and TX networks are, but it can run on those. And the longer you go with the cable, the longer the cable run is, the more you're going to drop off that speed. So
right,
short runs of Category 5E actually can run 1000 base T networks. It's just not super common. People don't plan it that way. Now, a Category 6 cable can run up to 250 megabits per second.
Right.
And that means 1000 base T and 1000 base TX networks. Again, I don't really know the difference between T and TX.
Have you really noticed instances where you've run cables too far and you've had a lot of latency or a slowdown in the network?
No, because I don't generally run network cables.
Okay.
I work on telephones.
Okay.
So mostly we're working on Category 3 cables anyway. So as far as Category 3 networks go, which are, you know, real depreciated, but that's what the current code is for telephones, is Category 3. There are things that I work with that specifically require Category 3 or better. And the cables that we run them on where I'm at, a lot of times they're underground cables. They're 50 years old
Wow.
or so, and they still run fine on those cables. And those are completely unrated. Many times they're completely untwisted.
Unshielded and everything else.
Well, yeah, and Category 5 and Category 6 is going to be unshielded as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, you're not typically going to want to run a shielded cable in your home.
Oh, okay.
Just because you have to worry about terminating that shield, and that's a real pain in the neck.
Okay, right, right.
So when you look at the side of the cable, you're going to look for, you know, Category 5E or Cat 5E or Cat 6, depending on what you decide on. And then you're going to look for it to say UTP, which is unshielded twisted pair cable.
Okay.
There's also STP, which is screen twisted pair. But I don't think they use that anymore. I haven't seen STP in a while. but I have seen FTP, which is foil twisted pair, and I've seen, there's another one for shielded.
So there's quite a various options of cables to wire up.
Yeah, there.
So is it safe to assume just to get the Cat 6, or?
Yeah, I would say it's safe. You can go with Category 6, because that'll run the 250 megabits per second if you follow the entire Category 6 spec.
Okay.
Which generally, to sum it up and put it in layman's terms, don't bend the cable tightly around corners. You want to make gentle, gradual bends. Don't loop the cable into big coils, which in the old days, if you've ever run cable before, you were instructed, loop that cable. When you get to the end of it, where the jack is going to be, you know, put a good 20 or 30 feet on the loop of that cable. In case we have to move the jack in 5 years, we won't need to run another one.
Okay.
You can just cut that loop free. Category 6, you don't want to do that with at all, because you're going to get attenuation in there. Another big deal with Category 5 and Category 6 cables, if you're sticking with the spec, is to terminate the cable as close to the outer insulation as possible, and to leave as many twists in the cable as possible.
Okay.
So if you're punching down to, say, a 110 block, what you want to do is run your cable all the way in where it's going to go and seat it in place where it's going to be, and then find the closest point to where the punch down is and ring the cable. Do you know what ringing a cable is?
No, I don't.
Okay, good, because I bet our listener doesn't know either. Ringing a cable is kind of scoring the outer sheath of it.
Okay.
And there's a cable stripper. There's a tool that'll do that for you. It's got a tiny little razor blade in it, and it cuts just a fraction of a millimeter, just scores it. And then you can just kind of bend the cable a little bit, and it'll break off.
Okay.
And it'll be like a perfect circle where it breaks off there. You can also ring it with electrician's scissors.
Okay.
Or any kind of scissors, really. But electrician scissors are really nice to use. They're very quick. And what's nice about them is they have one straight blade and one serrated blade. And the serrated blade doesn't let the cable walk around on it.
Okay.
So you can spin that. It's good for cutting bigger cables, too. But you won't be getting into that.
Right.
When you're running cable in an office building or something, you've got all kinds of, you know, standardized stuff. You've got conduits, you've got cable trays, you've got, you know, rings you can fasten to the ceiling to run stuff through. All kinds of fun stuff that just make it go really quick and really easy, and you can make it pretty. And you've got one of the biggest advantages in an office building is the suspended ceiling or the suspended floor, where you can hide a lot of sins up in there. You can do a whole lot that you wouldn't be able to do in your home.
Right.
You wouldn't want to see it, and your wife sure don't want to see it.
Not at all. Not at all.
So the trick to running in a house is hiding the cables in the walls. And there's several specialized tools that can cost you a bundle, you know, if you have to buy them all at once. But if you buy them with the thought that you can use them again, that doesn't hurt as much. You know, so we'll get, I think we can get into that first.
Sure.
And the first thing you're going to want to buy for your home is a stud finder.
Okay.
And you want a really good, you want the best one you can afford.
And how can you tell the difference between a bad one and a good one? Just price alone, or?
Well, you can try them and use them and tell the difference. The only one that I've ever used and really liked, I hate to give out brand names, but it was a Zircon, I think was the name of it. And I got it at Home Depot. It was about $18 or $20. And it had a an audible tone to it that let you know when you hit the stud. And like most of them, most of the electronic ones anyway, the ultrasonic ones, it has a set of lights to kind of climb up and light up for you. So a stud finder is really good. And you do want an ultrasonic one. There's the old style. There's the magnetic ones. But all those really find is screws and nails.
Okay.
They don't find wood. And that would be okay if all you had was an empty interior wall. You really only need to find the screws because they've gone into the stud. You know, the screws and nails,
right, right.
And the studs, of course, go floor to ceiling. The trouble comes when doing residential work is that there's fire stops in a lot of walls.
Okay.
And there should be fire stops,
right, of course,
in a lot of walls. And what a fire stop is a piece of 2x4, the same material that a stud is made out of, and it runs horizontally instead of vertically. Mm-hmm. And it's designed to stop fire, to smother a fire if the fire's inside the wall. But it's going to stop you from pushing your cable
right
through real fast. So you need to know where those are and when they're there. So the first thing is definitely a stud finder, and just to know where your studs are and what you're working with.
Okay.
A tape measure, if you don't have one, is going to be important. because you need to know, you got to have to find some kind of, for lack of a better term, a landmark that you can identify from, you know, the basement to the first floor.
Okay.
We'll say. Good things for that are like copper pipes, because you know those go through. Not so great things are like outlets and wires, you know, electrical outlets and wires,
right. Because
sometimes they don't go straight in the wall, so they're not the greatest thing.
Okay. But
if you've got a copper pipe for a sink or a heating pipe or something like that, those are a pretty good landmark and you can measure from them. And the reason you'd want to do that is because you're going to have to drill some holes.
Okay.
So you're going to need a decent drill. Well, really, you can use any drill, but you'll need a decent drill bit. And I always like using just the spade bits, if you've seen those.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flat bit with a point in the middle and kind of two points on the side. And they just make holes really, really fast. And they're really cheap.
Is there any certain diameter that you would choose? Do they come in different diameters?
They come in any different diameter you can think of, just about. They'll have a spade bit for that. And it's going to depend on how many cables you're running and how risky the hole that you're making is going to be.
Okay.
You know, if you're coming up beneath a soft floor, like linoleum, that might only have a piece of plywood under it, you're going to cut through that really, really fast if you miss and go off that stud a little bit. So you'd want the narrowest one you can get away with.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you're not worried about that and you're able to drill straight, and usually you're not, because usually you're next to the foundation and you're drilling at an angle. But if you can drill straight, go ahead and use a nice big one, like a half inch or maybe even 3/4. Half inch is fine for like one to maybe 3 or 4 cables. More than that, you're going to want a little bit more. Not that there's any lack of space once the cable is in there, but as you're running it, the space helps.
Okay.
And as you're fishing the wall, the space helps.
So you said fishing. What does that mean?
Okay, fishing a wall is usually done with a fish tape or with, we call them glow sticks. They're fiberglass rods that are threaded male on one end and female on the other. And you stick the rod or the fish tape into the wall and you try to find the hole that you've drilled downstairs and poke it through it. And then you can tape your wire with electrical tape. Just tape your wire onto that fish tape and pull it up.
Okay. So where I am, we don't have a lot of basements. So how is it different if you're using, say, an attic or something above the space instead of going under?
It's not too much different, except that you're not probably going to have any copper pipes to measure with up there.
Okay.
But you might have a chimney or something that you can measure from. Again, you want it kind of fixed. Otherwise, you're really guessing at it.
Okay.
When you're guessing at it, you just have to make your best guess. Sometimes an easy way to do it, it's not the best way in the world, but sometimes you got no other choice. You can just grab some wire mold, it's called. It's a piece of plastic that's self-adhesive, and it's just a kind of a square tube, and it sticks to the wall, and you run the wire in that. And sometimes that's all you can do. But if you can get into the wall, what you might want to do then is you make your hole in the wall. And have you ever used an old work box? Do you know what that is?
No. Like, is that like a junction point?
It is a junction point, yeah, and electricians use them. Usually, like if you went to, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's, they're like a little blue box, and they're 2x4 is the standard size, 2 inches across, 4 inches tall. Or you can go with a bigger one, you can go with a 4x4, but you probably won't need that for just networking.
Okay.
But you might want like a 4x4 box behind your television, where you might have cable coming through it. You might have 2 or 3 Ethernet connections nowadays. You know, so you may want something like that behind there. But if you make that hole in the wall, you're going to trace around the edge of your old work box and then cut it with a drywall saw. And that's going to cost you another couple of bucks, maybe, you know, $3 or $4 for a cheap one. I've been using the same cheap drywall saw for years, so that doesn't matter.
Okay.
Actually, here's a little tip. Cheap drywall saws are like $3 or $4. They've got a wooden handle usually, and they're pretty plain Jane looking. And then right next to it on the shelf, you'll see like a fancy one, and it'll be rubberized handle and like gnarlier looking teeth.
All spiffied up.
And a tapered point. Yeah, and it is spiffied up. But the only thing that really makes a difference between the spiffy, you know, $15 one and the cheap $3 one is kind of that tapered end, the point at the end of it. And you can take a file and just file the end of it so that you have one side tapered.
Does that actually help you at all when you're trying to...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it does, so it does help.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. Especially in like a firewall situation where a standard wall is going to be a half inch or 3/4 inch sheetrock, and a firewall is going to be 2 pieces of 3/4 inch. So you've got to get all the way through that.
Okay.
The way that you do it is just put the point, if you're new the first time you're doing it, take that old work box, face it at the wall, and trace around it with a pencil or pen. I like a pencil. Oh, by the way, when you trace it, you're going to want a level as well, like a 4-inch level.
Okay.
Just to keep that thing straight. There's usually a little bit of adjustment in the faceplate that you can twist that and make it straight and make it look pretty, but it's easier to do if you level the box in the first place.
Okay.
So the first one that you do, you're going to want to take that drywall saw and put it right in the center of that rectangle that you've drawn. And just hit it with the palm of your hand until it goes through. And once it goes all the way through, it'll move freely back and forth. And the only real trick with a drywall saw is just to not use a lot of pressure from the teeth to what you're cutting. Just move it back and forth and let it move the material out of the way. It's very easy to do.
Okay.
The harder you try, the harder it gets.
Okay.
Is the trick with
drywall saws. That sounds counterintuitive, but okay.
Yeah, well, you have to let the tool do the work for you.
Okay, right.
And that's true of any saw, really. If you start putting, like, say you're cutting down, you're cutting from top to bottom. If you start pushing down on that thing, you're just adding friction.
Okay.
If you move it in and out quickly, gravity is almost enough to pull it down.
Okay.
And drywall is very brittle and just kind of flakes away anyway. So I would start in the center and just work your way out from there until you're at the edges. When you get a little better at it and you've familiarized yourself with the tool and how much room you need because of the taper that you've got on the side and all that, you can start real close to the line and just make the 4 quick cuts. When I do it, I always make the 2 horizontal cuts first, and then I make the vertical cuts second, just so that there's not a big, long piece like putting pressure and trying to break off inside the wall.
Okay.
It's not a big deal, but I try to do that. And when you get close to the edge, you want to slow down and just go slower so you don't break off a big chunk and tear the paper off the outside of it. Tear the paper off the inside, it's no problem. If you're fishing from the attic, you can just let that chunk fall in the wall. You don't care.
Okay.
If you're fishing from down below, you're going to want to get that out of there because it might be in your way.
Okay.
So if you can take it out of there, do it. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes it just falls in and you're stuck anyway. Now, once you get that out, look in the wall and you may have insulation in there or it may be an empty wall. Insulation is going to make things harder to fish.
Of course.
So you'll need a real fish tape or the glow sticks. And I would say, well, it's going to depend on what you want to spend the money on and how much room you have to use them. A fish tape is real compact, but, and it's long. You can get, I mean, the shortest fish tape is like 25 feet.
Oh, wow.
But, and they're pretty cheap too, but a fish tape has memory to it because it's just a big piece of spring steel.
Okay.
So as you pull that thing out, it, you know, out of the ring that it's kind of stored in, it doesn't want to straighten out for you. It's not going to want to help you. You know, it's going to want to coil up.
Right.
Which you can work with. It's once you get the trick of it, you can figure it out and you can make it work for you, especially in an insulated wall. I find I like a fish tape a little better than the glow sticks just because you can sometimes get it past the insulation a little better, get it up against the wall between the insulation and the inside of the sheetrock, and it glides down a little easier.
Now, are the insulated walls, are those going to be more of your exterior walls, or can it be any walls that are insulated?
Your exterior walls will always be insulated unless your house is bad. Or, I don't know, maybe in hot places they don't have to, but I bet they do. Interior walls can be insulated. That's a luxury.
Okay.
Because it, and nowadays I'm seeing more and more interior walls are insulated. It really quiets down a house a lot.
Okay.
And it also helps to keep the different heat zones in a house separate.
Okay.
Because some people like a warmer room than others, or they want them all even and heat would just be traveling freely.
Right.
I do find lately newer houses, you're going to see more interior insulation, but it's not super, super common because, like I said, it is still a luxury.
Okay.
And the interior insulation also is going to be like R13, which is fairly thin because it's in a fairly thin wall.
Okay.
And it's not super dense. The exterior walls, I'm trying to remember now if it's R13 or R11 you find inside. It's just the cheapest stuff, and sometimes right. It's even completely bagged. And if it's completely bagged, you're golden. You can go right past that bag. So just getting past that insulation is your only real trick, unless you get that fire stop in there.
Okay.
then you have to try and get through the fire stop, and you'll need a really long drill bit for that. And they do sell those too. It's a long flexible rod.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're about 3 feet long, and it is also made of like a spring type steel. It's round, so it won't bend unless you bend it. And you can usually go up from the hole that you made for your box, and you can hit it from the bottom and go through there pretty easily. You have to be real careful and make sure you're going straight, though, or you're going to poke out through the wall into, you know, your kitchen.
Right.
Or a closet.
Sounds like a very bad situation.
It's not the worst thing in the world. You can patch anything.
Right, right.
But you will always see the patch. You know, a guest in your home may never, ever see it, but you will always see it.
Right, of course. Even if it looks perfect.
Exactly.
I guess one other question I was just thinking of. I don't know how wires are run inside of a wall. Is there any threat of running into a wire that's, I guess, running horizontally, or do they all run vertically, or how do they run?
That's a very good question. Lately, electricians stick better to specs than they used to in the old days, so it's a good idea to have a thing called a tick tester.
Okay.
And I wish I could tell you what brand of tick tester to get, but I don't know. The only one I have is terrible. But what a tick tester is, a little thing.
So don't get that brand.
Yeah, don't get the one that I have, and I don't even know what one I have. I throw it almost every time I use it. It's awful. It's a little thing you keep in your pocket, and you push a button or flip a switch to turn it on, and you wave it by electricity. And what the thing senses is anything that happens at 60 hertz.
Okay.
And when it senses that, it will beep at you or tick at you or light a light or any combination of the three. You can know where the electricity is. Typically, in a newer construction, and I'm not sure about slab basement, you know, slabs, houses built on slabs are probably wired from the attic down.
Okay.
So everything probably runs down the stud.
Okay.
When you're wiring from the basement up or from the first floor up to the second floor, they don't usually come down from the basement. They'll come up from below, and they'll run horizontally. I'd have to look it up. I think it's like 17 inches off the floor. I think that's about right.
So it's a very specific spec then.
Nowadays it is, yeah. In the old days it didn't used to be. And old work, again, it's always custom, so it's just where you can fit it.
Okay.
When electrical wire is running horizontally, it's going through holes that are drilled in the studs horizontally.
Okay.
And between those studs, which are usually 16 inches apart, by the way, all new construction, the studs are 16 inches on center to center. And older house, the stuff is usually 24 inches center to center.
Really?
Yep. Yep, old houses.
Huh.
Even some new houses in some places, I think, still do 24 inch on center, where insulation is not as big a deal. I think they're still allowed to do that. Hmm. I'm not positive about that, but I think they are. And in some mobile homes, maybe even, they're allowed to, because they're built a little different.
Right.
So when they're running vertically, though, they're always stapled to a stud. Unless you put that in there yourself after the wall was up, you're allowed to run an electrical wire through a wall like that. To the best of my knowledge, you are, as a homeowner. You know, I'm not going to say that I've personally done it, but I'm not going to deny it either. But, you know, then you run it up in the wall and there's no way to staple it. So for the most part, they should be stapled to the wall. And the only time you'd really have to worry about it is when you're using your old work boxes. One of the beautiful things about those is you put those mid-span. You put them between the studs. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have 6 inches at least to either side of it. So you're not going to be anywhere near the electrical wire.
Okay.
The other nice thing about electrical wires is, though you can't use them as landmarks, you can run next to them.
Oh, okay.
You can poke it down through the hole. Now, you may lose some speed on that particular run. I don't know what the speed drop would be. But in a house, sometimes you cheat a little, you know?
Okay.
And drop it down there, just because that's safer than trying to drill a hole down through, you know, a header or a footer.
Right.
Which is what the wall studs are nailed to. One thing I wanted to get back to was, if you open up the wall, poke a hole in the wall, and there is no insulation in there, there's a really good trick for getting stuff in there. Do you know what a ball chain is?
I do not.
Ball chain is a chain made of balls. It's usually like when you pull a light on.
Okay.
You know, lights with a pull chain, those chains there?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, okay, so a ball chain. Those are, to the best of my knowledge, always made of steel and then just plated with something else. And the nice thing about steel is that it's magnetic. So what you can do is tape a ball a ball chain, I'm sorry, like maybe 2 or 2 feet or 3 feet of ball chain onto the end of something that you can get into a wall. And that chain, those balls, will like find their way down. Gravity will, because they're heavy enough, gravity will pull those things down.
Right.
You can then pull them out of the wall with like a pen magnet.
Oh, okay.
So for instance, if you are running a wire through your ceiling, through your attic, and you can get up into the attic and get into the crawl space, and you can drill a hole down into the wall on your first floor with a hand drill and a spade bit, but there's not enough room up there to get your, you know, your long drill bit down to drill through the fire stop. So you go downstairs and you make the hole for your box, and you put your long drill bit up, and then you drill through the fire stop. Well, now the trick is you've got to get something from that top hole down through the fire stop so you can pick it up on the bottom. You stick a ball chain on the end of your fish tape or on the end of your glow stick, and you get it down in there, and you feel it, and you listen to it until that ball chain hits that fire stop. And then you can wiggle it around, and eventually it's going to fall through there. It might take you some time, but it will eventually fall through the hole in that fire stop. And then you can pick it up out of the wall with a pen magnet.
Right, right.
Is the easiest way. Or sometimes you could just grab it. But that's one trick that a lot of guys, that even like pros that I work with, don't seem to know how good a fishing tool those ball chains are.
Huh.
Because they just, okay, they kind of flow like water. You know, they seek gravity. They seek their way right down. So that's one handy thing. Now, another thing you can do, now that I'm mentioning it, if you're going to run a lot of these things, you don't necessarily need an old work box. You can use just a ring, an old work ring. It doesn't have a whole box on it. And it's only legal for low voltage applications, but they're a heck of a lot cheaper. Well, not, they're not even a heck of a lot cheaper, but they're cheap enough, you know, and they're easier on the cable, I think, than the old work boxes. Because what the old work boxes have at the back of them is a little flap, like a reed flap, and you push your wire through it, and then you pull back on it, and it locks into it.
Oh, okay.
Which you usually do with like Romex,
okay,
which is electrical wire. That's not the best thing to do with your Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable.
Right.
Because you can split it right open with those.
Ah, okay.
So you either have to like pull those things out of there or cut them out or bend them until they're useless and then run your cable in that way. So you pull your cable down the wall, out the hole in the wall, then you put it in the box, and then you put the box in the wall and fix it in place with the ears that it comes with. Mm. Another thing to do is there are just plastic rings. They look like an old work box, but with the back cut off of it. And they're just a little bit easier to work with.
Okay.
I use those at work. And a lot of times, if you have a narrow, a thin wall, that's the only thing you can get in there is those thin ones.
Okay.
So those can be handy. And I forget who makes those, but I'm pretty sure I found them just by Googling LV-1 old work ring or LV-1 low voltage. They come right up. And those are kind of handy. I like those too. So, have you ever terminated cable before?
Have I ever what?
Terminated cable before.
Yes.
Okay.
I have.
So you know how to punch down to 110?
Yes.
Okay. So, for any of the listener who doesn't know how to punch down 110, just buy Hubble stuff. I hate to say it. Again, I hate to use brands, but, I mean, don't buy Leviton. You know, you find that in the hardware stores near you. Forget it. Go to an electrical supply place, order them special if you have to, or get them on the internet. But the Hubble stuff is so good because even when they rev their designs, they're reverse compatible. They still snap into all the old stuff, and all the old things still snap in and work with all the new stuff. They're just so easy to use. And if you buy a box of 25, you get a tool that doesn't even put a little bruise on your hand.
Ooh.
You know, which is actually kind of important in a house because otherwise you're going to bruise your hand. Or you're going to put it up against the wall and mark a wall up or something. So you get a little tool with the Hubble ones. It's kind of nice. It's just a little holder that holds right the jack while you punch down. And I always just say, I mean, I don't even know if they offer anything else anymore, but I always just say get the 110 punch downs.
Okay.
It's the easiest thing to use. You know, everybody has a 110 tool nowadays. They have, you know, multi-tools with 110s on them nowadays.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't get one for professional use, but, you know, for just using around the home, it's fine. And I've seen little plastic 110 tools sold at, like, Home Depot that they couldn't have been more than a dollar or two, I don't imagine. I mean, if you're going to do it professionally, go out and get the Harris Draken tool. Or
right, of course.
Or it's Fluke now. They were bought by Fluke. They're just great tools. If you're just going to do it in the house, you could get the Ideal punch tool, but... You know, like they sell it at Home Depot, but I've owned that one. I don't like it.
So I guess I'm curious here. We've talked about the process and how it's all done. What are some of the things, what are the things that a rookie would do if they were just taking this project on? What are some things that they should look out for, they shouldn't do, or they should know before they do it?
Okay, so one of the biggest things you can do wrong is really the worst, the most dangerous part is drilling. You can have a lot of mishaps while you're drilling, especially, like I said, with the spade bit because it cuts so fast. Like, say you're downstairs in a basement and you're drilling up through a sill or you're drilling up through a subfloor into a stud wall. You usually don't have enough room to drill completely vertically. So you have to drill at an angle, and that's a real guess right there as to, where am I going to come out inside this stud wall, and am I going to come out inside this stud wall? You can drill straight through the wall if you're at an angle into outdoors, and you'll have daylight. I've done it. Everybody's done it once. I had another house where the house that I owned, the heat was baseboard forced hot water, but it was real old and real early forced hot water stuff. It was all cast iron. And it was recessed into the walls. So when I drilled up into this cast iron piece. Fortunately, cast iron's a lot tougher than a drill bit, but if I had hit copper, I had had water all over the floor. And it would have kept running and running. So that's another thing to watch out for. One trick you can use if you're coming down from an attic space is a lot of times, like in a prefabbed home, the ceiling itself, the sheetrock itself, doesn't end at the corner of the wall. Sometimes it continues on a little further, sometimes below the headers, the wood that's up there. So it's a little tricky to tell what's going on up there. You can take like a pin, a sewing pin, and poke it through and see if you see daylight. And no one will ever notice that if it's, near a corner or near an edge of the top of the wall. And if you see daylight, that's not the spot to drill into. It's not the first tool I'd rely on, but if I was unsure of something, that's a good way to go about it. It's good to have a helper if you can find a helper, someone who, if you're feeding the wire down the wall, they can grab it or they can pull it up for you. Or sometimes there's a bend that you just can't get around, and they can feed it around the bend for you. So that's nice to have. What else for rookie mistakes? Cutting your wire too short. That's
That's got to be painful.
yeah. And ask anybody, they'll tell you they'd rather throw away 20 feet of wire because they pulled too much than to be a foot short. So I always try to pull an extra 5 feet at the end of each the end at each end if I'm working in my house. That's because I'm paying for the cable. If I'm working on a job site, I'll make sure it's 15 feet on each end. And I'll estimate that into the job as well, just so that it's there for me if I need it. Another rookie mistake might be if when you're punching down, and this is not a big mistake, this is easily correctable. When you're punching down to your jack or the other end, you're probably using a 110 strip at the other end or a jack panel or something. A mistake is to use the wrong pin configuration. That's something that I see all the time. I see guys who just do not know the pin outs. They'll be able to do a jack because it says on there, it says A and it says B, and it's color coded. For networking, you always want to use B. It's 568 Bravo. You always want to use that Bravo. The only time you use an A, you don't use it at the jack, you use it in the cable. And it's for making a crossover cable. So to connect two computers in an ad hoc fashion. Or to hook up a hub. Some hubs don't have an Ethernet in, they only have the outs. And they'll have, like this is old stuff, but they'll have something else feeding into it. Some other wire standard. There was one I saw, it was like a 15 wire input. I don't even know what it was. It was almost a parallel cable, but not quite. Then I was able to make a crossover cable to go into one of the jacks and get three outputs from it and use the rest of them. If you know your pinouts, you can do a lot of tricky stuff. But at home, you don't really need to use it. Just use the Bravo. Another mistake you can make actually with Cat 5 and Cat 6 is pinching the cable. You don't want to pinch the cable either. They're laid out in there real specifically. There's a spec for how many twists per meter is in there. They want them to be laid out next to each other in a certain fashion as well. And if you pinch the cable, you can kind of flatten them out, and that'll get you a little bit of speed degradation too. Probably not noticeable, but yeah, probably not noticeable. Without a real expensive tester, you probably wouldn't notice it. But if you pinch it a lot of times, you're gonna have that. And one way you can pinch it a lot of times is using like a stapler to staple it up to a stud. You can get a wire stapler where that won't happen as much and the staples are specially shaped, I think that's kind of a waste of money for a homeowner just to do it that way.
Right.
In the home, there's a couple of different things you can use. You can get Romex staples, which you drive in with a hammer, and they're slower, but you can be sure to leave enough room. A lot of times what I'll do is just buy the really long Romex staples and drive them in about halfway, like the whole length of the run, and then pull the cable in afterwards.
Okay.
And they'll just slide right through. And if that cable's loose in those staples, it's perfectly happy being loose. It doesn't need to be tight. Another one of the pitfalls you can run into is if you're running in a basement area and you go across studs, like from one to another, and you make a span, that's a big no-no to a building inspector. It's basically, the rule of thumb is, if grandma can come down there and hang a coat hanger on it, that's trouble. So you want everything tight up against the studs.
Okay.
And that's really about it for the real big pitfalls that I can think of off the top of my head. Drilling through stuff, that you didn't mean to drill through, or that's the big one. Cutting holes in walls where you didn't mean to cut them.
Right.
Actually, that's another one too. I've done this myself several times. You may check and check and check and check, and you're fine. You're great. There's nothing on that wall. No problem. I'm poking a hole in here. And you stab that through there, and you hit something inside the wall that you didn't know about. And a good stud finder should be finding these kind of things, but it may not. And some things you might hit inside of a wall when you stab your drywall saw into there is pipes. Copper pipes might be in there. That's a good thing to find, because you're probably not going to damage a copper pipe with a drywall saw.
Right.
But if you find a PEX pipe, you could cut right through it.
Ooh.
That's the new plastic pipes. You may find an electrical outlet that's on the other side of the wall.
Oh.
If you're in the living room and your kitchen's on the other side of that wall, you could hit an outlet that's mounted on the other side of the wall. So be sure to check both sides of the walls. Be sure to check top and bottom. And be sure to use the heck out of that stud finder. Get your money's worth out of the stud finder.
Right.
I think it's about it for fishing walls in a house.
Okay.
A lot of it is, you know, what some people might call common sense, but I wouldn't call it that. I would call it careful calculation. You really want to measure twice and cut once. You don't want to screw this up, because if you drill to the outside of your house, now you got a big hole going outdoors. And sure, you can fill it with some great stuff, or you can hang a welcome sign, or, you know, a nice piece of slate or something that you decorate. Whatever, you can cover it up, but you know it's there.
Right.
You'll always know it. I've done it myself several times on my own home. I was trying to go from the basement to the second floor. And the right way to go from a basement to a second floor is to find some place, usually in the middle of the house, where you can go from the basement to the attic and then go from the attic down. And I could not find any place like that. So I thought I would be able to make the hole for my box and drill down through. And I didn't realize that the second floor had kind of a sill that jutted out from the first floor. And I'm just pushing my fish tape down and down and down. And I'm almost at the end of my fish tape. And I'm going, I've got to be there. Why aren't I there? And I'm shaking it around, and I can hear it clanging against the wall. And then it sounded a little different. I said, what is that? That's weird. What is that noise? It's not hitting sheetrock or a stud. And sure enough, it was hitting the tree in my backyard.
So really?
So I had to go and, you know, patch up that hole. And it's not a big fix. It's not terrible. But I had to go patch up a hole.
Right.
And find another way to get it. It happened that I could not drill downwards from that second floor on that particular wall, because it was a step. It goes down, comes in under your feet, and then goes down again.
So it really is custom work. I mean, what you said earlier, it's just knowing your situation and working around whatever, however your place is designed.
That's right. It absolutely is. And, you know, another thing to keep in mind when you're running these things is home runs, which means that everything's going to come back to a central location. That central location doesn't have to be the center of your house. It's wherever you can make it convenient for you, you know, to have like that jack panel going. It's real smart, I think. So say you have a wireless router, okay, and it's got a couple antennas on it, and it's got 4 Ethernet jacks coming out the back, or 8 Ethernet jacks, whatever it's got. You want to put that wireless router in the center of your house for maximum coverage.
Right.
You know, so if you got a 2-story house, you want it in the middle of the first floor, up near a wall, you know, up near a ceiling. Or you want on the second floor, maybe even down low. you know, to get maximum coverage, but that might not be a convenient place to bring all your cables into. You can just run the two cables to that, because of course you have a, you know, one from your router or DSL modem or whatever you've got going to your wireless, and then one coming back out, and you can make like a switch there, or you can put your cable modem wherever it has to be. Sometimes you don't have much of a choice with those. A wire going to another switch, and then the switch feeding out to the wireless router. But it's tricky because now you're dealing with different subnets. And if you're trying to network your home, sometimes you don't want to mess with all that stuff.
Right.
What I personally think a better way to do it is find the spot where you want your wireless to be and make provisions to get lots of cables to that, one for every jack. And then you pull those lots of cables down to a jack panel. You break them out so that you can get at each one individually. And then you run all the jacks from the rest of the house to that.
Okay.
And if you're fishing a difficult wall and you want to get four wires or eight wires down it, you probably want to get like a bucket of pull string. Or in a house, you can usually get away with like a kite string. And all you do there is when you fish the wall and you push the wire through the wall or pull the wire through the wall on your fish, tape a piece of string to it and pull it up with the piece of string on it. And then when the wire gets up there, you're going to cut the string off, and that you're going to use for your next pull as if it was a fish tape. It's called a pull string.
Okay.
And when you put your next wire on, tie another string to it, because you're going to pull up your original one, and you're going to want to leave a string behind to pull your next wire with.
Okay.
It's real important also if you're fishing a difficult wall and it was tough to push your fish tape down, it's going to be hard pulling it back up. So you're going to want to be real good about taping your wire onto the fish tape. There is, believe it or not, kind of a trick to taping. If you're using regular old electric tape, get the good stuff because you want good, strong electrical tape. You get the, Scotch 88 is one, or Scotch 33 I think is another. I've used both of those. They're great. But the trick to using electrical tape is to make it really bond well with what you're working on and not come off until you want it to, is to stretch it as you're putting it on there.
Really?
Yes. You don't want to put it on flat. You want to stretch it as you're putting on, and you want to put it on tight, and it will wrap on there tight and hold pretty well. When I wrap electrical tape, especially for a tight pull, and I think this does make a difference, say for instance I'm pulling up, so I've got a fish tape coming down from above and the wire's coming up from the bottom, I will start taping the wire from the bottom and work my way up towards where I'm pulling to. When the tape overlaps itself, what you'll see is that the seam of the tape is always pointing down. Whereas if you were to start it at the top and come down, where it overlaps is pointing up and can roll down on you and cause you to catch and stick.
Ah, okay.
And it usually makes no difference whatsoever. Usually you can glob tape on there, just ham-fist it on there, no problem. But in a tight pull, I really believe it makes a difference that you start from the bottom and overlap every wrap so that you don't have any surface pointing up. Have you got a specific wall in your house that you think might be tricky?
No, I haven't even looked at it, really. It was, you know, we have this place, and I've been trying to think about how to wire it up, and I hadn't even started working out the process, just sort of thinking, how would it be done? I know, like, you have cable installed. They just go straight for the wall and drill it in the wall.
They do. They go from the outside of the house.
Right.
And they drill in. They don't do anything inside.
Right. They don't even try to, you know, drop wires or, you know, fishing and any of that type of stuff. They just run to the wall and drill it in and call it a day.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Yeah, they call that wrapping a house.
Wrapping a house, okay.
Yep, you'll see some houses like these giant McMansions, right? You know, this guy just paid $350,000 to have this place built, and he didn't pay the electrician to run cable. So the cable guy comes, and he's got, you know, six bedrooms and a living room and a den and the kitchen, and he wants cable in all of them. And you'll see a bundle of 12 cables, you know, cable TV cables, just bundled together, wrapping around the outside of this guy's $200,000 house.
Wow.
You know, wrapping a house is horrible.
Right.
It's really bad.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty crazy.
It is. It's pretty nasty. Now, another thing you can do is you're probably going to buy a single box of cable. And it'll be, you know, like I said, either Cat 5 or Cat 6. Category 5 cable, which is Cat 5e, like I said before, you can usually get that in a box. And it pulls off the box. It pulls out from the center of the box. And it's real easy to pull that out of there. It's a nice, easy thing to do. but you have to watch out for that cable kinking. That was one thing that I should have mentioned before when you said, is there anything to watch out for?
Okay.
You want to watch out for your cable kinking as it comes out of the box. If it loops and you pull the loop out, it'll put a twist in it and a kink, or if it twists on its own, and that kink can catch while you're pulling.
Ah, okay.
And it does not take much tension at all on a kink to make you pull for all you're worth and not be able to move that cable. I mean, you'll break the cable in half before that kink lets go. If you get a kink, you know, try to find it, pull back on it and untwist it. Sometimes you can't find it, but if you pull back, you can still work your way through it. And if you know you have a kink and you know you can't get to it without undoing everything you've done, of course, you can tie a pull string on the end of it and pull everything back and then take care of it. If you can't, it's buried. It's inside the wall or it's under a crawl space. It's someplace that you cannot get to no matter what you do. You pull back about 5 or 10 feet of cable, then you pull it really fast and you hope that it comes through, just bounces through with speed. If you pull slow, you're guaranteed to catch it again.
Ah, okay.
So it's a little counterintuitive, and you don't want to pull hard so that if it does catch, you don't want to pull it and break the jacket.
Right.
But if you pull fast, you can usually bounce it through there. You have to be kind of close to the end of your run or at least close to an opening for that so you can untwist it, or else it's just going to keep catching.
Okay.
And that's trouble. If you're working alone, you've got to go, you know, you're up in the attic. Now you've got to go all the way downstairs. You probably take your shoes off, go over and, you know, pull it back a little bit, and then go back up to the attic and try to take care of it. You know, my wife didn't let me wear shoes in the house when I'm working, so I hate having to go back up and upstairs and downstairs more often than I need to, you know, unless she's not looking.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Do it quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So that can be a little tricky. But you can also use what's left in that box as your jumper cables.
Okay.
Going from the wall to your devices, there's really nothing wrong with that. Some people won't want to do it because your jumper cables are usually stranded wire, and the stuff you're going to put in your walls is going to be solid wire.
Okay.
So some people don't like to do that because solid wire is just stiffer. It's really nothing wrong with it. You can go for it.
Of course.
Now, do you have a crimper?
No, I don't.
Have you ever crimped cable?
Yes, I have.
Okay. A lot of people don't know how to crimp Cat 5, and it can be a little tricky. So for our listener, I think I'm just going to go through it real quick.
Sure.
When you're crimping down an RJ45 onto the end of a piece of cable, the easiest way to do this, wring the cable and break the jacket off about 4 to 6 inches back from the very end of the cable. So you've got 4 to 6 inches of twisted pairs sticking out the end of the cable. You want to cut the rip cord, which is, it's a little cord in there. It's a piece of thread in there. You want to cut that out and get it out of your way because you don't need it. And then you want to untwist your cables as far back as you can to the end of the jacket. Then lay them out next to each other in the order that you need them to be. And then kind of run pull your thumb away from towards the end of the cable and away from you so that they kind of curl towards you. They'll curl up and towards you. And then put your thumb under and pull them again so they curl down away from you. And do it back and forth a few times and you'll flatten that cable out. And you'll take the little kinks and twists out of it. So now you've got 6 inches of almost perfectly flat cable that you can work with. And that's very easy to insert into an RJ45 plug. So then you just line your plug up next to it and figure out how much length you need and cut off the excess and throw it away. And it's very easy to crimp that down at that point. But I've seen even pros try to stick, you know, kinky, twisty cables in there one at a time and just get very frustrated. And it is a frustrating thing.
Yeah, it is. That's the one part that I can speak to. Like getting the colors straight and then actually getting the cable into the jack, getting that full connection where, you know, getting it tight and a full connection so that it actually gets the connectivity.
Yep, it is. And one thing that I like to do as I'm getting them nice and flat like that is I'll pull the jacket back away from the end of the cable, just kind of slide it back as far as I can and pinch it and hold it really hard while I'm flattening those things out. So that when you insert your cable ends into the RJ45, you can push the jacket back up in there. And there's a piece built into that RJ45 that's meant to grab onto the jacket. So it's kind of important that you get a little bit of the jacket in there.
Right. Yeah, that was one of my problems. I didn't get enough of the jacket in there. You know, you could wiggle it right back off again.
Yes.
You crimp it and it's not enough there to catch, so it flops right on off.
Yeah, well, that's the other problem too, is that's not having not enough jacket. That means the wires weren't inserted fully.
Right.
If the whole thing pulled off, before you squeeze your crimper down, as you're pushing those wires into the RJ45, you want to look at the end of the RJ45 through your crimping tool and wiggle your cables around and make sure that you can see them all actually touching.
Okay.
And once they're touching and you're ready to crimp, that's when you push your jacket in. You don't let your jacket slide up into there until then. And I've gotten 100% success rate putting cables on that way. If you've ever seen phone wire, which I work with a lot, and it's just four flat wires, and all you do is strip a little bit off the end with the stripping blade that's on the crimping tool, put the end on it, push it in and crimp it. You don't have to line anything up or do anything. And you don't get 100% success rate with those.
Okay.
But you can with network cable. Oh, let me go over one more thing. This is something you will definitely want to think of if you're running cable in your own home, is the difference between riser cable and plenum.
Okay.
Have you ever heard either of those words before?
I have not.
Okay. So riser cable is just a generic term for cable that, you know, allegedly is for going between floors, riser. It rises between floors, which is not necessarily true because you can run it on horizontal runs. So it's kind of a misnomer. And the other one is plenum. And what plenum is, all of the insulation in a plenum cable, if they burn, the smoke will not kill you. If you burn riser cable, the smoke is toxic.
So you'd want to use the plenum then?
You would want to use plenum if the smoke is going to be somewhere that you may breathe it.
Okay.
Typically speaking, for the safety of your family and your home, yes, plenum is the thing to choose. The thing to keep in mind about plenum is it's much more expensive than riser cable.
Of course.
And it's much more difficult to work with because the jacket itself, it's not that nice jacketed cable like you are used to seeing. A lot of times it's very plasticky and crinkly, and it can catch on lots of stuff.
Okay.
So it's a little more difficult to run. It can be a lot more difficult to run. If you have a choice and it doesn't cost anymore, you want to get plenum on a spool, not out of a box.
What's the difference between those?
Typically, a box is a lot easier to pull out of.
Okay.
It pulls from the center of the reel or of the spool of cable, and the box just sits there and there's no moving pieces. There's just a kind of a plastic tube that sticks in the middle.
Okay.
And it pulls everything out from the center. Very, very easy to work with. A cable reel is a spool. It's going to be plastic, usually nowadays. You know, I've seen wooden ones. I've never seen a metal one for network cable, but I've seen metal ones for electrical cable. And you're going to need something for that spool to spin on and unwind from if you're pulling off of that. You want that to spin. You want an axle in there to be horizontal, and it spins off of there.
Right. Or does it spin away from you?
Well, it can spin away or towards. Doesn't really matter which way it goes. But if you stand the thing upright and try to pull off the top of the spool, pull off the end, every time you take cable off there, it's going to put a twist in it. Every single spin, it's going to put a twist in your cable, and you're going to get kinks like crazy.
Okay.
You won't even be able to do it. It won't even work. You'll get 25 feet away from your spool, and you'll just be in a tangle of cable. And the only way to fix it is to go back and literally spin it back on that way, the way it came off, and now go twist it back on, and now find something to put that spool on.
Oh, okay.
I've seen boxes of cable with spools in them, and the spool just spins inside the box. Those are kind of handy if you have plenum, because plenum won't kink as much coming off the spool. spools don't kink as much as boxes. Boxes can have a tendency to kink, and riser doesn't typically kink coming out of a box.
Okay.
Till you're close to the end. You know, that's the reason to go with a spool if you're using plenum, and a box if you're using riser if you can get it. I've seen Category 6 cable that I can't imagine it coming in a box. It's just so thick and so stiff. And I've seen the spools of Category 6 that some of the other guys where I'm working at are using. And I can't imagine pulling that out of a box. I don't think it would work. And some of them I've seen, some of the earlier Category 6 stuff I've seen that's not quite as thick. The boxes are just giant, you know, maybe 50% larger than a box of Cat 5. And they've each got the same amount of cable in them. Boxes are 1,000 feet. And a spool is 1,000 feet. So that's something to keep in mind, too.
Wow.
And the last time I bought cable for home, the riser cable, Category 5 riser cable, was, I think it was $80 for the box. For 1,000 feet, which isn't too bad when you think about all the runs you're getting out of it.
Right.
The price of plenum for the same 1,000-foot box and same brand and everything, Category 5E, it was $175.
Wow.
So it was more than twice the cost for plenum.
Right. That's quite a substantial difference.
It is. And that and the difficulty of pulling it. I've never had plenum that was easier to pull than riser.
Okay.
One of the other things about Category 6 is all the stuff I've seen lately has a piece of plastic in the middle of the cable, and it's like an X-shaped thing, and it seems to just keep the twisted pairs separate from one another. while it's inside that cable. They can't cross over if you bend it or something. So that seems pretty good for keeping the speed up, but that stiffens the cable a lot. Sometimes you want your cable to be stiffer. If you're going on a straight run, makes it a lot easier to go. I mean, you know, you can go 500 feet on a nice long straight run if the cable's stiff and doesn't have a lot of memory to it. We could talk about patch panels.
Okay.
So for a patch panel, usually the best thing you can have is a nice big piece of plywood that you can mount everything to, and you want to stick it in your basement. But I'm not sure where you might put a patch panel if it's in your home.
Okay.
You might probably have to like find a closet somewhere that you can stick it in. Find a piece of plywood. And plywood's good. You want plywood because you can drive a screw into plywood.
Okay.
You can't really drive a screw into sheetrock and expect it to hold. Even mollies I don't like in sheetrock. They'll pull out eventually. You know what a molly is?
No.
It's a little plastic plug. Think of like a plastic cylinder with a hole down the middle.
Okay.
And it's kind of split most of its length. And you stick that in a hole in sheetrock. And when you drive your screw into it, it spreads out and pushes against the sides of the sheetrock.
Okay.
So instead of pulling on the sheetrock from front to back, it's pushing on it side to side and putting tension on it that way. Those are great in concrete. They're fantastic in concrete. They hold really, really well. But I don't like them in sheetrock. They do pull out. I've seen mollies that thread into the wall that have just giant threads and are supposed to hold with that. Those seem to do a little bit better. But if you have to go into sheetrock, the best thing you can do is find a stud and screw into that, or use a butterfly screw. And that's a kind of a screw. It's got a machine thread to it, and the end of it has a couple of little metal wings, and they fold in to get narrow so you can push it through a hole. And as soon as they're in there, they spring outwards so that they pull on the back of the sheetrock, and those are pretty strong.
Okay, so it's fairly like locked in there almost.
Yeah, those are pretty locked in. Those are pretty good. But having to use a bunch of them next to each other can be a real pain in the neck. If I had to put a patch panel in a closet, I would still use a piece of plywood, and then I would just paint it to look like the closet. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's not going to matter too much anyway, because you're going to be mounting equipment to it, but the edges of it you'll see, you know, and your wife will see and say, what's all this, and why am I getting splinters on my clothes, and,
right,
you know, that you're hanging out. But, you know, when you're limited in space, that's what you got to live with.
Right.
So that's one good thing to do. And everything we're talking about today, too, you know, this can all apply to any kind of cable that you're running in your house. Cable just means metal wires inside a jacket. So you could be running speaker wire with the things we've talked about today. You could run electrical wire. You could run telephone wire, doorbells, alarm systems, all these things. These are all how you get wires through the wall and stuff. So it's a good thing to know. One really good thing to have before you get started is a beginner's book on home electrical wiring.
Okay.
Those are really good to have. I paid maybe $18 or $20 for the one that I have. And it'll teach you how to patch sheetrock. Sometimes you just have to cut sheetrock to get into a wall. Sometimes there's nothing else you can do. It'll teach you how to patch sheetrock. It'll teach you the general rules of thumb on where you can find those electrical wires, how high you want to mount stuff on the wall. And there's all kinds of codes for that too, for where you want your electrical outlets on the wall.
Right.
A lot of older houses, they're lower down, and a lot of newer houses, what they'll do is they'll raise the electrical outlets and they'll lower the light switches a little bit, just so that older folks don't have to bend as far or reach as high up to get them.
Okay.
And if you're running cable and you're buying all these tools anyway, and you're buying this giant box of cable, 1,000 feet, which sounds like a lot, but it's not, depending on how many runs you're making. If you got it left over and you're running it anyway, I always say run 2 jacks at least per room. You have one on each wall. You never know, you might want to move a desk somewhere else.
Okay.
And if you're in a pinch, here's a trick. You can actually, you won't be meeting spec with this, but I've seen it done. You can split Ethernet cable. When you open up that cable that we've been talking about all night, there's 4 twisted pairs in there. Your 10 base T and 100 base T and probably 1000 base T, I'd have to check the spec. They only use 2 pairs. The other 2 pairs are just dead. They're not doing anything at all.
Oh.
So if you know which pairs to use in there, you can cut the jacket a little bit further back and spread them out and punch them down to 2 different jacks. That's a handy trick. And there's also, I've seen splitters that you can buy and plug into the jack at each end. So if you've got, you know, one in the wall behind your computer, and all of a sudden now you have a network printer that you just bought, and you've only got the one run going. You can buy a jack splitter, and you plug it into the wall, and you plug your computer into one, and you plug your printer in the other, and at the other end of the cable, back at your router, you plug another splitter, and then you put two Ethernet cables going into that, and it will use two pair for each of those devices inside your four pair cable.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it can save you a lot of work, you know, if you've only run one.
Right, right.
Or if it was built into the house that way. Because if it's built into the house, if somebody thought of that when they were building the house and putting your cables in, they're all stapled into the wall just like electrical wiring is.
Okay.
And they won't move. If you put them in there and you know you put them in there, you can usually just use it as a pull string and pull in two more cables.
Right, right.
Cable's not that expensive that you can't use one as a pull string. Or else you can tape a pull string to the end of your cable, pull it back up, and then tape another one to it and pull it down, and now you have two. You can use a cable to pull in a pull string and then use that same pull string to pull the cable back.
Right, right.
Yeah, pretty much everything is custom. And the more you know about the house that you're working on, if you've seen the thing built, or like if you're building a home, and even if someone's running cable for you, take pictures of everything. And you can go back to those pictures in 10 years and go, oh, wow, this Cat 6 is so old. I'm going to need Cat 12 in here because this is just ridiculous now. Or, wow, who uses copper anymore? We need fiber. If you know how it's built and you know where to get, you know, how to get from point A to point B, where all the holes are and everything, you can go for it. It's easy. You know, even if you want to hire someone to do it for you, say, here's the pictures.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's about it for running cable at Resno's house.
Now I'm a pro.
Yeah, I'd say so. Thank you, Resno, for joining me and helping me out with this.
Sure.
That really helped. Like I do on all of the HPR episodes that I've done so far, I'd like to close with a song from songfight.org. And the song I'm going to pick today is by a band called The Anarchaeologists. And I haven't done any research on this band whatsoever. I don't know if you can find them on the internet anywhere at all. But they've got this one song called Twerp, spelled TW3RP, and I like this song a lot. I don't know if it's their only song on Songfight. I didn't even look at it. Resin and I, we got together last minute on this one, so I didn't do a whole lot of research on it, but the band is Anarchaeologists and the song is Twerp. And thank you all very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you like the song.
Thanks.
I could tell. I could tell my father. I could tell my father taught me well. When my million cookies rolled off the table, my father looked me straight in the eye. Before I knew that I was in trouble, the words he said come back in my mind. Be good to your mother and father, or you'll break their heart. Be good to your brother and sister, or they'll tear you apart. And the peace in this household shall never ever be disturbed. And you should listen closely if you don't wanna be a twerp. Oh. Father was just as clueless as me. When my kids are dancing up on the table, I will look them straight in the eye. Before they know that they are in trouble, the words you said come back in my mind. Be good to your mother and father, or you'll break their heart. Be good to brother and sister, or they'll tear you apart. And the peace in this household shall never ever be disturbed. Oh, and you should listen closely if you don't wanna be a twerp.
father looks me straight in the eye. Before I know that I am in trouble, the words he says come back in my mind. Be good to your mother and father, or you'll break their heart. Be good to your brother and sister, or they'll tear you apart. And the peace in this household shall never ever be disturbed. Oh, and you should listen closely if you don't wanna be a twerp. Oh.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.